I stumbled on a company called Lucid Diagnostics, and they have a test called EsoGuard that actually will detect the cells, the DNA, that is a precursor to Barrett's esophagus or precancer. So this test is not that expensive. It's something that could be administered in the office. It's non-invasive, and there are three big characteristics of esophageal cancer potential patients, and they are: if you're over 50, if you're white, and if you're slightly overweight. So the push for this company is to get those people that are in that big three tested for esophageal cancer before it becomes untreatable. My treatment was, like I said, it was vicious. It was 11 months, $2.2 million billed to the insurance company. And yeah, I survived. I'm lucky enough to do that. This is a diagnostic tool that, if tested, if given to everybody who was at risk for esophageal cancer, would literally cut the number of people who would have to go through what I went through by thousands and thousands of people. So you're looking at thousands of children, thousands of marriages, thousands of family fortunes. Not that I had a family fortune, by the way, but you know, it's the collateral damage that needs to be quantified for people.
It still hits. I don't miss. It's go, 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 like a go, go flow. And I'm almost done. And I told y'all so. When I throw these flows, like a stroke shimbo. And I ain't too close, it's your smoke goes. And I'm on my grind. That is all the time. I do not do breaks. That's right, I stay in dry. And look, I'm back with a little bit of that. And a little more cash than I came in with. Ready, that cat is out that bad. But I still ask you, the boy got skills. I don't need her, I don't need him. I don't need help with me, I got this. I can sing songs, I can spit raps. And I can do both, even do this. Word.
Support for the Honest Dax podcast comes from Montage Planning Partners. Partnerships like this make our community a better place to live and work. That's why Montage Planning Partners is proud to support the important work of Honest Dax. When it comes to financial planning, most financial companies ask, what's your salary? At Montage Planning Partners, we ask, what's your story? We know building the right financial plan means looking at more than just money. That's why we start by asking the right questions, listening to what matters most to you, then guiding you every step of the way to help you live the life you want. Now and years from now. Plan your financial story with Montage Planning Partners with Northwestern Mutual, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Contact Montage Planning Partners today. Visit montageplanningpartners.com for further information and disclosures. This episode is brought to you by Sweat Tent, the pioneers of the portable wood-burning sauna. Did you know that using the sauna 3 to 4 times per week could reduce your risk of cardiovascular disease by up to 50% and make you 60% less likely to experience Alzheimer's disease? That's why I've been a big fan of the sauna for years. But having to go to a crowded gym to do it isn't ideal. And all the at-home options are bulky and expensive. That's why I only use the Sweat Tent for my sauna needs. It's the most storable and affordable wood-burning sauna on the market. It not only takes minutes to set up, but it can reach 200 degrees Fahrenheit in 30 minutes or less. So whether you're enjoying it yourself in your backyard, with friends, or in need of a reliable sauna on the go, Sweat Tent is your best choice for the most portable, storable, and enjoyable outdoor sauna experience. All On The Stacks listeners will receive $100 off when you use code OTS. Visit sweattent.com today to get $100 off your purchase with code OTS at checkout. Again, that's sweattent.com to get $100 off with code OTS. Sweat Tent, helping you fire up your home wellness routine. This episode is brought to you by FitAF. If you haven't already noticed, I live and breathe entrepreneurship. Whether it's launching new ventures, attending pitch meetings, or mentoring budding entrepreneurs, my schedule is jam-packed. And that's where FitAF steps in. Their menu changes weekly, offering a variety of chef-inspired meals designed by nutrition experts using only the best quality ingredients, keeping me fueled and focused. Their vast selection of meals has you covered for all types of dietary restrictions and diet plans, including keto, paleo, vegetarian, vegan, gluten-free, and more. As an On The Stacks listener, enjoy our exclusive offer. Get 20% off your first order of 7 meals or more when you use code OTS at checkout at fitafnutrition.com. Again, that's code OTS for 20% off your first order of 7 meals or more at fitafnutrition.com. Healthy meals and seamless nutrition, keeping entrepreneurs at the top of their game. What's up, podcast? I'm your host, Bill Corcoran Jr. here in the MPP studio. Jeff Thomas, welcome back to the On The Stacks podcast.
Thank you, Bill. It's exciting to be here when we have video.
I know. It's been a while. It's been a few years. In mm-hmm. fact, you were episode 59, your first go around, mm-hmm. and no video then. Right. So no one got to see how well you were dressed, your very nice right. glasses. You came very prepared, right. by the way. Not that I expected you wouldn't have been prepared.
Well, yeah. A lot of people have told me I have a face for radio, but
yeah. Now they can actually see
it.
Now
they can see the resplendence that is me.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So if anyone is listening now that was still listening way back, in the OG days, you're an OG.
I'm an OG.
You are.
It's something gang, right? I mean, in your gang?
Yeah.
Old gang.
Original gangster.
Original gangster. Yeah. Yeah,
typical boomer.
Oh,
that yeah. I had to, you know, slide that one in there.
Did you hear that, audience? Yes, I am in fact a boomer.
You are.
We're going to talk about that later.
We are. Yeah, we have a couple boomer questions for you that I think our audience will enjoy.
Excellent.
And hopefully you can get through them.
Oh, I'll get through them.
Yeah. Yeah. No, but it's been some time, and like you said, I'm glad we got back together to do this. And you've done some cool things. You're doing some cool things now. You know, more so than what you were last time. And I'm excited to learn a little bit more about what you've been up to in the last few years.
Well, thanks, Bill. I appreciate that. But before I go on, I want to just commend you on what you've built here. This is a lot. It's come a long way since episode 59 or wherever we were over at that pet shop place or whatever.
Yeah, right.
This is really beautiful.
I got out of that little, it was like a small closet, essentially.
Right, right.
I've upgraded a little.
Yeah, very nice. Beautiful. Yeah. I love it here. There's no
Thank
mold.
You.
There's no nothing. Right.
Right. Yeah. We've come a long way.
Yeah.
We've come a long way.
Congratulations
for
that.
Thank you.
And as a boomer, you know, we like to give credit to the younger kids when it's due, and I believe it's due you.
Well, not a lot of boomers do, I think. Yeah. I think that's the thing. And so I commend you for that, because I feel like a lot of boomers, you know, don't like to give credit where credit's due and tend to overlook, you know, the value of certain people.
Right.
In certain situations.
I agree.
Yeah.
100%. And
but you're not one of them.
No, I'm not. No, yeah. I value our relationship, and it's only 3 or 4 years, but I speak well of you all the time.
And yeah, yeah. So, and one other thing too, I just also want to say, you know, so again, you were, you know, episode 59. That was back in 2021, and I shared a little bit with you before we came on too. But my mom Sue, she's like the show's biggest fan, by the way, as any good mom would be. Mm-hmm. But she watches everyone, so she's going to be watching it. As soon as, you know, mm-hmm. she hears us now, she's going to be texting me, right? But she'll remember your episode, because, you know, from your episode way back, you know, in 2021. But since my mom was diagnosed with cancer just about a year ago, I can't tell you how many times I personally have referenced back to your episode when you were on the first time around. And just me listening back to that and to help me, you know, help my mom. Right. And then just, and to just give perspective maybe to maybe some people who don't understand when you're working, you know, with, and you have somebody in your family or somebody close to you that has cancer and the things that they're going through. And, you know, like you were saying, you know, ask them questions, you know, and, you know, not the stupid canned answers. That's one thing that stuck in my head. Like it really did, Jeff. Like that stuck in my head since then. And, you know, again, that was in 2021. Right. Now, again, a year ago. Like I said, when my mom was diagnosed, one of the things I remember back to, I just said was your episode, and I probably listened back to it probably multiple times since then. And I've recommended other people to go back and listen to it, you know, to be honest, like in my family and friends, and said, hey, if you want to try to understand like what I'm going through and or what my mom is going through, go back and listen to episode 59. That'll give you a little bit of perspective.
Thank you. And some of the questions, and some of the, statements that people make, and I'm just going to go over a couple by way of refreshing the audience's memory. Excuse me, I'm going to cough. Excuse me. Here's one. You got this. Well, that's very much easier said than believed. I mean, it's maybe not the best thing to say.
No,
here's another
not.
One. I could get hit by a bus tomorrow. That's not a good thing to say either.
Yeah, not comparable.
Right, not comparable.
Yeah.
And then you get the remedies. Well, you got to cut out sugar altogether, or you got to get weasel toe, or you know, you got to smoke hornet's tongue. And everybody gives you these things.
Crazy, yeah.
And at the end of the day, I mean, the hardest thing to manage is 6 inches between your ears, because even if you have friends and family, you're still going through it alone. I hate to say it. And everybody says, well, the caregivers have it just as hard as a person who has cancer. I beg to differ. I mean, I think it's a nice thing to say to caregivers to keep them coming over, but I don't think that's true at all.
Yeah.
And I defy any one of my caregivers to say that it was harder for them than it was for me. Mm-hmm. So if your mom is listening, Sue, I hope you are doing well, and I think you have a wonderful son. You should be very proud of him, and he speaks very well of you. And it's a testament to the strength of a father-son, mother-son relationship.
Yeah. Yeah. No, she, yeah, all good. Yeah. She is, she's very proud, and she'll, when she sees this, and she'll be texting me, and she'll be wanting to talk to you too, probably.
Beautiful.
You know, so I appreciate that.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Yep. Yeah. Yeah. But yeah, but like you said, it's a difficult thing. And, you know, as you said, it's a lot of people, they don't know what to say, and they think just by saying, you know, oh, you're strong, or she's strong, or, you know, like the you got this, she's got this. Like, no, actually she doesn't. I hate to, you know, sorry, mom, but, you know, and anyone else, but like, you know, not to be morbid, but, you know, like it's not you got this. Right. Like it's, you know, in fact, it's, you know, it's probably the opposite,
right?
You know, but.
And then the implication, and this is what I always hated about people who characterize cancer as a fight. Well, if for some reason you do succumb to cancer and you pass away, the implication is that you lost a fight. It's not a fight. It's a condition. You do the best you can. You show up. You do everything you can medically to circumvent any outcome and to avoid the inevitable outcome for all of us. But longer is always better. And characterizing it as a fight, I think, sets people up to say things like they lost their battle. Well, no, I didn't fight. I just showed up. And so, Sue, just keep showing up. And I wish you well.
Yeah, what was that song you mentioned? It's right on the tip of my tongue. And at the time, I felt like I was like, oh, I couldn't remember what the hell it was. Or I didn't know what it was. And you were trying to explain it. Now I'm blanking out on what the hell it was, too. I totally just went sideways on my own story. But there was some, oh, this is what it was. It was, I don't know the song, but you do, and most boomers would.
Thank you.
Sorry, I had to put another boomer joke in there. But it was, you said, someone saved me every day.
Well, that was it.
It was,
that wasn't a song, but that was part of the context of the speech that I used to give.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
At, like, colleges.
Save me
cancer.
That day, like every day, or right? What was
some,
it?
Someone saved me every day. During the course of the whole thing, you'd have to go for chemo, radiation, surgery. You would interact with people every day, and you'd get the normal amount of stupid comments, or not stupid, but ill thought out comments.
Right.
That you got this and stuff. But then somebody would say something insightful and. Or ask me something, whatever they'd say, I would be like, wow, that gives me respite. That gives me pause. I can get through another day based on what that person told me. So that it is and was true for me. And I hope it's true for your mom.
Yeah. Yeah. And so what is it? 13 years now?
13 years. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I'm sorry. 12 years, May 9th.
12 years.
Wait a minute. What's
it? Yeah, it was 10 years when you were in 2021, right?
Yeah, no, you're right. 13 years. 13.
I know more about you than you know about you.
I lost the year there somewhere. I don't know where it was.
Jeez, I was almost like embarrassed there. I'm like, gee, I thought I did my homework enough on this guy, you know?
You're
like,
spot on.
I know. So, you know, obviously it's been a couple of years since we've really had any substantial conversation, obviously. So,
correct.
How have you been since then?
Well, I have, In the last 3 years, so I like I said, I transitioned relationship wise. I met a new woman, and her name is Allison Wood. She's from North Carolina. She runs a med tech company, which she just sold to a venture capital firm. We've had a really exciting courtship, and the last 2.5 years have been wonderful. I proposed to her last November in the American Airlines customer service line in Charlotte, and we were planning on starting our true life together after Labor Day when I moved down there. So
you're going down there?
Yeah, I'm gonna.
Nice.
I mean, I'm gonna keep the luxury palace up at Newberry,
of course.
And we're gonna
commute,
but I'm gonna spend much more of my time there.
Nice. So, well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
That's exciting.
It is very exciting.
It is.
It's a whole new world for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Is the South somewhere you've always kind of wanted to be? Like, did you ever picture yourself, like, moving south? Like, I know a lot of people up here that I feel like that's, like, a common, like, you know, northeastern PA thing is, like, everyone's like, you know, when I retire, I'm you know, maybe it's a boomer thing. I don't know.
Well, I think, and maybe I would have said that before, but one of the things that Allison and I have really come to understand is that wherever we are, we're together, and it's important that we're together. And even we're not together, we feel like we're together in different places. And so to have a relationship like that kind of makes all the other potential locations to live secondary. So I'd rather live in our relationship and reside somewhere.
That's a really good way to put it.
Wow. I don't know where it came from, to be honest. Yeah.
It's that knowledge. That's the boomer knowledge, I feel like. I think I've said boomer so many times now people are probably pissed. You think people are sick of my really bad boomer jokes and references already? We're only like 10 minutes in. And
boomers have short memories, so they probably forgot most of them.
Yeah, right. And you've been through, you've had another battle with your eye.
I have.
You got another war story.
Right. I'll share it with you if you'd like. I've been fortunate in that after the esophageal cancer, there are a lot of side effects. I have to sleep on a 30-degree angle, and I have to eat smaller meals and things like that. But other than that, I've been very lucky. So I continue to golf and do fun things. And this past October, I was playing golf in Elmira, and we were driving home, and I had to pee, and the designated driver pulled over, and I jumped out of the car. And I tripped and I fell forward, and I had a stick poke me right in my right eye. And it didn't hit the eyeball, but it hit between the eye and the nose, and it was a real thin stick. And it went behind my eye. So my eye swelled up, really hurt. And then instead of going to the doctor's that night, I just put ice on it. And the next morning it had all swollen up. And so I obviously went to the doctor's the next day, and then they took pressure on my eye, and supposed to be 14 to 22, and it was 46. So the pressure had already, of the hemorrhage behind the eye, had already choked off the oxygen supply to the optic nerve. So I cannot see out of this right eye.
At all?
At all. Not one thing. It's like if you had cable and somebody pulled the cable. That's what it's like.
So, wow.
Yeah. And there's no chance, using current technology, there's
no chance to bring it back.
No.
Wow.
So I went through a bit of a depression after that, because as you know, I've already lost my esophagus, lost my appendix, lost my gallbladder. I didn't really care about those things. But then to lose another eye, after this happened, I felt like, wow, I'm just leaving this world one organ at a time. And, you know, obviously, you know which organ I wanted to leave last.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Hopefully you still got a few more that are, you know, that you could do without. Right.
Right. Yeah, before we get to
we get to the final destination.
But so Allison, the doll that she was, dropped everything. She flew in and took care of me and helped me manage my care for 5 weeks while this went on. And what they didn't find out, it wouldn't have mattered, because the hemorrhage happened so quickly that it wouldn't have changed anything.
Even if you went right away.
Right. They said 90 minutes, and there's no way I would have been able to be on an operating table in 90 minutes.
Yeah, damage was done.
Yeah. So, but 5 months later, I went in for some pain. I kept saying it really hurts. And then they did a some imaging studies, and there was something in there. And she went in, and it was a 15-centimeter stick that was right behind my eyeball, which they had to remove surgically. And I would like to have gotten that out a little sooner, because it did hurt the whole time. And, you know, because they didn't see it, I'm not saying they didn't believe that it hurt, but I think they had a better understanding of it once they pulled it out. Mm. So I'm lucky in that cosmetically, my eyes were never that great anyway. I mean, they were always a little bit askew. And if there's an upside, I think it might be just slightly straighter than it was.
Mm.
So it's less lazy.
So there's a little positive that came out of this, huh?
Yeah, if I have to really, really focus on thinking it's positive, but yeah.
If you're really,
it's the only thing I can think of.
Right. Well, hey, at least it's something, right?
Yeah.
So you know, you said you went to a little bit of a depression after that. Was it you know, just felt like, here's another thing I got to deal with.
Well, it kind of coincided with some other things that were going on in my life. I'm looking for a post-cancer opportunity to make an impact, and I had been in touch with a lot of charitable organizations. I went to the V Foundation in North Carolina, and everybody was talking to me about, you know, you can hold a light scepter or one of those things, point at the big donors at our banquet, mm-hmm. and you can do this and you can do that. And I was like, wow, that doesn't seem like enough for me. Like, I want to do more than that. Mm. Even if it's, you know, I don't care if I get paid, but I want to do something that in my mind is more impactful. So I was in the middle of that search when the eye thing happened. And so while I was recovering, I was laying there. And when you're alone with your thoughts, you know, it's a bad time. And I was sitting there thinking, well, you know, here you are, you know, cancer survivor, one eye. Who would want you for anything? And so kind of had to pull myself out of that. And Allison and my family members did their best to get me through that. I would say it lasted 3 to 4 months when I came out on the other side, I was like, okay.
Was it the family that really helped you through it?
It was Allison that really helped me through it.
Yeah.
She has a really good way of asking questions to make you think. And what you need when things like this happen is to get out of your own head. You have to be thinking about something else. And she's so good at asking me questions that get me to think about things that don't involve me. And she doesn't make it so obvious that I know what she's doing. So she's really, I guess the word crafty would fit here.
But, yeah.
She loves me like crazy, and I love her like crazy. So
what'd you think about? What were you like? So she helped you kind of think, right? Mm-hmm. Beyond, right. You know, what you were dealing with. Like what'd you think? Did you find like a purpose or something that you said, hey, like this could be my thing that's going to help me make an impact?
She just kept reminding me that the eye cosmetically, there was really no way to tell that I had lost my eye, that when you have 100% vision and you lose vision in one eye, you lose 30% of your vision. You don't lose 50% of your vision. So she reminded me of the fact that when this all is over, I would still be a viable human being, a viable friend, a viable father, a viable employee, a viable volunteer. And she did it by asking me questions that made me realize it. Like, what do you think about your kids? What do you think about my son? What do you think of my daughter? What, you know? And so now I'm out of my head thinking about her problems, thinking about my kids' problems, everybody else's problems. And that's what, you know, got me through. So, and she knows I'll always appreciate that time with her.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. What else? Did anything else come out of this?
The eye thing?
Yeah.
Well, I have already, I mean, the brush with the esophageal cancer was, you know, pretty close to the abyss. And this I would like to say that it helped, you know, with my other senses, my hearing and my sense of smell. And it didn't. I still can't.
I was going to say, it reminded me of your very first episode that you attempted to do back in 2020. Mm-hmm. And when you guys did your episode, and it lives on Facebook still. I had to watch it again before you came in, and
I plug it?
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah. For those of you out there who haven't seen it, it is it's a sound check for the ever popular, well, actually never popular, Daddy and the Bobcat, starring Vito De Luca and Jeff Thomas. And, we had it all set up. We had a nice podcast in my room, and Vito was on his way over, and He's a really good guy with sound stuff, but so we hadn't had everything all connected yet. And I said, stop and get some food. I'm starved. So Vito's idea of food was a bottle of bourbon and a cheese wheel. And then he decided that we would do some peacocking. We would wear wigs and glasses and costumes. And, you know, we were not above dressing up. So we did that. And then we proceeded with the sound check. I think it's a 4-minute clip, but it was the beginning and the end of our podcast.
That was
career.
It. That was your run.
That was our run.
Yeah, but it reminded me when you said, you know, made you hear better, because during that episode, you guys couldn't hear. You're like, he's like, can you hear me now? And you're like,
yeah.
No, say it softer. Yeah.
A lot of that. I really couldn't hear a thing until I heard it. Then it was loud.
That's fine. I literally, I was right before you walked in, I pulled up. I was telling Eric, I'm like, oh, you got to see this. And I joke, but the funny part is, so at that time, even at the time, you know, so that was months, several months probably before you even came on my show.
Was it really?
So that was in 2020. I think that was in November of 2020.
Right.
And then you came on my show like in March or April of 2021.
Right.
You beat me to video. I didn't even start video until almost 50 episodes after you were on. So, I mean, you didn't make it past that one, but right. I mean, yeah.
Well.
You attempted.
Yeah, in the interest of full disclosure, it was Vito's OWL camera that we were using. And at the end, when we decided to dissolve the podcast right after that 4-minute broadcast, he took the OWL camera and I haven't seen it since.
That was it, huh?
That is correct,
yeah. Ah, man. Well, you know, it's not too late.
Well.
It's not too late to do something. I'll say something. It doesn't necessarily have to be a podcast, like, entirely, but... Right. You know, I'm a little further along here.
Absolutely. I'm very interested in talking to you about doing some per event podcasting here, and even some other podcasting that might help further the missions of some of the organizations that I'm involved with, and I'd gladly pay somebody who doesn't bring bourbon and a cheese wheel with them to help. So
well, I mean, I could still bring that if that's a requirement.
Might be in the contract.
Yeah, but hey, just we'll put it in there. It'll work out.
Fair enough. But I do think you have something here, and I think that people should really look at this facility and your skill set and your Eric.
Yeah, Eric.
Eric's skill set as being a real asset to this organization or to this area. So
thank you.
If you are thinking about, to those of you out there who are thinking about podcasting, don't buy all the stuff and put it in a box like I did.
That's what everybody does, honestly. You know, so the statistic, I think it's 90% of podcasters don't make it past episode 3. Think about that. 90%.
Yeah. Right.
And then another 90% don't make it past episode 20.
Wow.
I'm not good at math, but it's a very, very, very small percentage that actually then make it past episode 20. If 90% after 3 and then only 90% after 20.
So 98.1%.
Something, yeah. So it's
are gone after 20.
Yeah, so you're already in the almost.
You can check my math on that. But
yeah, top that's one, the answer. 1%-ish. 1-ish percent.
1.9%.
1.9. Close enough, right?
Fair enough.
Yeah, I'll take your word for it. I'm bad at math, but I know it's somewhere in that ballpark. Right. So, no, but that's a real serious thing. I think that well, first of all, I'll start with the joke that I always tell, even though everybody's already, you may not have heard this, but everybody else has. I said everybody wants a podcast until they have a podcast,
right?
Because they don't realize it. You know, I'll say to do it right or somewhat right.
Right.
It takes, you know, besides the skill, we'll put that aside for a second, but the time and the effort and the consistency and the dedication, all that. Right. Yeah, there's so much more to just showing up and recording. I mean, we have it to the point where, you know, we now have, you know, we're doing production for multiple other shows, you know, simultaneously in addition to ours, you know, mine here. And, you know, obviously we have a system and processes and technology and everything to make it, you know, obviously a lot faster. Right. And we could now do it to the point where somebody like you could just show up and record and we could do the rest, you know? But, you know, for somebody that's doing it themselves, I know this is a real bad shameless plug, but again, with someone that's doing it themselves, I mean, you know, you did it, right? There's all the things that you don't think about are, you know, it's 90% of the stuff that you don't see that you have to do that.
Right.
It's 90% of the stuff that nobody wants to do.
Right.
And I actually enjoy that and take pride and you know, and I enjoy doing this type of work and, you know, pre-production, post-production. There's writing, there's grab, you know, there's so much to it, you know, and you know, even, to be honest, even when I started, I didn't even know what the hell all was involved until I started doing it. But I think that was I always said that like it was a good thing that I went into it and didn't overthink it because had I thought about it some more and realized how much work it would actually be and what it would take and how much it costs and everything, so on, I can go on and on and on, I probably wouldn't have done it because I just would have talked myself out of it, or I just would have done what everybody else did, 3 episodes and quit because I'm like, oh, shit, this is too much work, you know? But, you know, like I said, if somebody's in that position and wants to do it, you know, is looking for somebody to do it, we can do that.
And I mean, it's got to be regular, it's got to be relevant, and accomplishing those two metrics is difficult.
Yeah.
And that I think is quite a bit of the battle, and you've done a great job of that with 200 and how many?
You're somewhere around like 222, somewhere around there. Episodes. So it's been, you know, basically one a week,
right?
Since 2020.
Right.
You know, give or take a couple weeks here or there, I take off. I almost died, you know, six months ago. Right. I took a couple weeks off for that.
Give yourself a little break.
Yeah, sure. I know. Yeah, I did. I think I took a few weeks off. Maybe, I don't know. I forget how long. I lose track of what the hell I did yesterday, let alone a few months ago. But like I said, it's something I really, really enjoy and something that I think we've become very good at. Mm-hmm. And I'd love to do it for other people too, you know, and show someone the way, even if it's somebody, you know, even if it's something where, you know, we got somebody started and get them, you know, up and running for the first year and then maybe they could take over.
Right.
We could obviously teach somebody. But again, it's kind of one of those things where once it's up and running, you're not going to want to go backwards and have to do it yourself. And I mean, unless you have the budget to basically hire somebody in house to do it full time for you. But, you know.
And all the time you're going to be incubating them, you're going to be building your skill set with regard to all the other peripherals. And I would think that if somebody were going to start here, they'd probably want to stay here, to be honest with you, because you'd be getting better at it. I don't know why they'd want to go out and spend their own money, get their own expertise to do something like this.
So right. Yeah.
That's exciting. So I'm ready to segue now.
Go ahead. What's the segue?
Tell me about your trip to Kenya and give me three of your big takeaways from your trip to Africa.
A lot of perspective. Mm-hmm. One of them is, and I'm embarrassed to, this might be the first time I might be even saying this maybe on the show since I've been back. I've obviously recorded a handful of episodes I've been back, but the amount of, I'll say, poverty in the world in general, not just Kenya, it's a ridiculous amount that somebody while I was there shared with me. Mm-hmm. And, you know, as we were there looking at, you know, I'll say like, you know, the conditions, the living conditions and the people and everything else and seeing like, wow, this, you know, it's a third world country, right? But again, like being there, and whoever's been to a third world country and maybe in some, you know, I'm not talking just going to like Mexico on vacation. Yeah, of course, you drove maybe an hour from the airport and you passed a couple shacks on the side of the road, but that's different than actually being, you know, I'll say out in the trenches and really out in the communities and meeting these people and actually, you know, talking to them. And the fact that somebody shared with me was 85% of the world lives like this.
Yeah.
We're standing in an area where there's just people who can't afford, let me just put in perspective. Mm-hmm. The water project that we are there for to help install a water well is the public can come up and buy water from this well. Mm-hmm. It costs 8 cents to buy a gallon of water from this facility. 8 cents. Think about that. Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And the majority of people in Kenya still can't afford that.
Wow.
So think about that. Yeah. Right. So again, you know, when somebody said to me again, we were standing here, like, you know, on the side of the road, literally cars going by, there's just hundreds of people everywhere, you know, the facilities over here. Mm-hmm. And so he says, 85% of the world lives like this. Yeah. And I, to be honest, and I didn't say this to him right in that point, but I almost didn't believe him because it seemed so exaggerated. It almost seemed unlikely, like it wasn't true, that, you know, 5 minutes after I'm over here on my phone, Googling it to find out how much the world is third world and how many people watch. And he was right. Yeah. And he was right. I mean, that's shocking.
The stat that I heard was, and I'm not 100% sure of this, but there's 8 billion people on Earth and 7.1 billion of them live on less than $2 a day, which is terrifying.
Yeah.
So,
yeah.
Everything's relative, but we are very lucky to have been born where we are.
Yeah, yeah. So I think, you know, obviously perspective is one thing. Made me a lot more grateful for everything that I have. And by the way, we talked a couple minutes, and, you know, just from being on Facebook, you obviously see and know a little bit that's been going on in my life. But, you know, a few months ago, we went at the end of, where we went, yeah, like it was the middle of July. Mm-hmm. We went for 12 days. April Fool's Day is when I had my AFib incident. So
you weren't there when you had it.
No, April 1st.
Oh, okay. Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. So on April. Yeah. So it was actually March 31st, which was it was Sunday. It was actually Easter. It happened actually like 11:30 p.m. on Easter, and then I didn't go to the hospital till the next morning. But So again, leading up to this, I didn't even know if I was. So we've been planning this trip since December of 2023. Mm-hmm. Okay, was when we decided, hey, we're going. We didn't book anything actually really until I think like May-ish.
Right.
So I had the heart incident in April on, you know, basically April 1st, April Fool's Day, right? Mm-hmm. Had to explain that one to everybody, right? This is, you know, not a joke. And then, you know, just a few months after that, you know, then I'm in Africa and, you know, at the time that, you know, I had the AFib incident, there was part of me that I didn't even know if I was even then going to be able to go, you know, we hadn't booked any travel, thankfully, at the time, but, but after, you know, that April 1st, I was like, oh man, like, am I even be able to go? I'm like, am I even be able to be cleared to be able to go? But then even once I am cleared, I'm still nervous about it, going on a plane, 14-hour flight.
Right.
You know, so we had the flight, just the elevation, and then just everything else. I mean, just being there, and by the way, I mean, this, I know, you know, part of you said, one of the things you wanted to maybe talk about was healthcare. So the other thing that was also shocking, but I guess not when you really think about it, it's third world country. And one of the other things that made me a little nervous too was, so everywhere that we were, the closest hospital to us was probably about 3-hour drive away. Yeah. Think about that.
And probably was not near as well equipped as...
I would, honestly, right. I mean, unless I was dying, I don't even know if I would even want to go.
Right.
You know, I mean, I don't mean to sound, you know, like a jerk here, you know, saying that, but I don't know what the facility is like. You know, who knows? Like, you know, would you want to go to a hospital in a third world country? Probably not.
No.
Right? So, again, there's that.
Right.
You know, and I think there's just so many things. There's just so much about that trip that, you know, it obviously it puts so much in perspective.
Right.
And I really think everybody in this world should probably at some point, you know, go to, not saying you have to go as crazy as I did. You know, we filmed 4 episodes while we were there, and we got some other content too. And hopefully by the time this episode is out, we'll be releasing that content too.
Right.
But like, it just, I think there's just so many people that, you know, look at it, they may see the pictures online and they're going to see the podcast and they're going to see all this stuff and they're going to be like, oh, okay, I kind of get it. You do to a degree, but it's one thing to see pictures and see video and hear my stories and everything else. But to be there is a whole nother thing.
Yeah.
And like, I mean, one of the craziest things, Jeff, was all these people who have like less than nothing, like literally less than nothing.
Right.
We're so happy and grateful that we were there. Like, forget the work that we are doing and that we are helping them.
Right.
Put that aside for a second. Like, they literally were just thanking me. Like, I actually had multiple people come up to me and look me right in the eye and just said, thank you for being here.
Wow.
And to be honest, part of me was like, I didn't know what to say. I was like, I'm like, why? Like, for what? You know what I mean? Like, and I didn't really know what to say back. And the one gentleman, he was just like, he goes, yeah, he's like, you know, thanks for, you know, obviously for this, and he's pointing over at the work that they're doing, which, you know, we were helping, we were part of, but he was just like, I'm grateful that you came.
Right.
He's like, you know, obviously, you know, they could pretty much tell we were from the US, but everybody asked like, where are you from? The US. Okay. Like, you came all this way.
Right.
Like, they actually said that. Multiple people were like, wait, you came all the way from the United States here to our village. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, yeah. That's nice. And they're like, wow. Like, they were in awe. They were shocked. Right. And they're like, thank you. It's like, just thanks for being here.
Right. It's nice to be appreciated, right?
Yeah.
Getting back to the healthcare we talked about, the average, you know, the life expectancy of a Kenyan male is 62 years. In the United States, it's 74 or something like that. They probably have less to engage in terms of bad behavior, but they still don't enjoy the same length of life that we do, and those numbers are representative of the African American community in the United States as well, and other minority communities. And toward that end, this is kind of where I wanted to go. Africa is one whole big different story. I mean, they have virtually no access to anything other than clinical healthcare. But in the United States, where you have the huge gamut of healthcare options, from people who are on Medicaid all the way up to people who have these VIP executive plans, you know, that cost thousands of dollars a month and cover the families and the copays and everything, we talk about leveling the playing field. We talk about everything's, you know, ever since slavery, everything's over, everything's fair now, right? Well, Muhammad Ali put it better than anybody I know when he said, y'all freed us, you didn't give us any money, didn't give us any land. So it comes as no surprise that the median household income of a 50-year-old African-American family is one-tenth that of a 50-year-old Caucasian family. And I think, so what I would tell you there is, don't listen to the people that tell you that this whole thing has been squared up. It's not been squared up. And I don't know what the answer is, and I'm not proposing an answer, but I'm telling you, if you believe people when they tell you that the playing field is level, it's not true. You know, you've pretty much, you've got a whole group of people, 33% of the African-American people in the United States, very few of them could tell you where their ancestors are, going back to when their ancestors got here on a ship. So what's it like to not have a legacy? I'm Lithuanian. I know where my family came from. We have some Polish people, whatever, but they can trace it back to where they got to. And William Baldwin talks about this. James Baldwin talks about this a lot. How would you like it if you had your whole history erased, and then they dropped you in a foreign land, and all you could learn was back to where you got to the United States? So the reason I bring that up is because there, since Jim Crow and some of the new things that have happened that aim toward racial equity and outcome equity, medical outcome equity, we've done a lot of things right. I'm sorry, equity in general, we've done a lot of things right, but medical outcome equity, we still lag way behind. For example, African-Americans take up 36% of the American population, 33%, something like that. But when you look at what percentage of them are involved in clinical trials, only 11% are involved in clinical trials, right, for cancer or for any other communicable disease. So with AI lurking in the background, and it's safe to assume that AI is going to be coaching a lot of the medical community very shortly. It's all going to be data-driven treatments based on statistics and history. If the African American population is only participating 33% of where they should be, is that valid data?
Right. Yeah. There's a lack. There's a gap. There's gonna be a big gap of data. That's a big gap. That's not gonna be accounted for, and therefore, it's a domino effect now.
And certain diseases, like an African American man is twice as likely to get diabetes, and twice as likely to die from it. An African American woman is 20% less likely to get breast cancer, but 20% more likely to die from it. So and I'm not just talking cancer, there are lots of other diseases, pneumonia, all of them mirror the same thing. Lots of it's socioeconomic. These people are not fortunate enough to live in areas where they can get good health care, and they also live in food desert areas where the only option is to go to, the 7-Eleven around the corner and get a couple of hot dogs. So they're not afforded the opportunity to get and consume really good food, and of course that's going to hurt you long term. So it's not that I was ever a right wing guy, but I certainly understand the plight now of people from other countries wanting to come to the United States to enjoy a better life. And I really have trouble when people say we should secure the border. Of course, I do agree that we should secure the border and get people in here legally. But there's no way you can fault somebody for wanting to bring themselves and their family here for the opportunity to live 10 to 12 years longer than they would otherwise live, to get better treatment, to have lower infant mortality, to have a better education. Does it cost a lot for the Americans? Yes, certainly it does. I mean, English as a second language is a big thing for school districts now. They have to, every 10 new students, they have to get another ESL teacher. But we're either who we say we are or we're not who we say we are. So that's what worrisome for me. And when I understood all the nuance behind the healthcare disparity, outcome disparity for people of color, I thought, you know what? This is a pretty noble cause. So I'm involved with the Gwen Lilly Foundation and Research Foundation. And our goals are twofold. One, to get more African-Americans, people of color involved in clinical trials to even up the numbers so that when we go to AI, we have good data. And the other one is education and advocacy. We want to start at the K-12 level to teach these kids that their father, who is 40, is twice as likely to die of diabetes, is twice as likely to die of a heart attack, and to get them to get that.
On the Stacks will be back in a flash after a word from our sponsor. This episode is brought to you by Elevation Wellness, NEPA's premier wellness center located on Mundy Street in Wilkes-Barre. From pro athletes to busy parents, Elevation Wellness is leading the conversation when it comes to bettering your health through integrative medicine. Founded by NEPA native Louis Helmecki, Elevation Wellness offers physician-formulated and guided treatments that are administered by registered nurses. To learn more about how you can experience the benefits of IV vitamin therapy, multivitamin booster shots, non-invasive aesthetics, or peptide, NAD, red light, and compression therapy, visit elevation-wellness.com or follow them on Instagram at elevationwellnessNEPA. All On The Stacks listeners will receive 10% off their first purchase with code STACKS at checkout. Call 570-762-9400 or visit elevation-wellness.com to book your appointment today. Elevation Wellness, taking your health to new heights. This episode is brought to you by Burn, the fitness company behind the Today Show approved Burn Board. If I'm being honest, working out can be a real chore, especially as a new dad in desperate need of sleep and cardio. Burn is founded by NEPA native Jimmy T. Martin, and his Burn Board offers a low-impact core and cardio experience unlike anything I've done before. They have hundreds of on-demand workouts that are great for beginners, seasoned athletes, and out-of-shape podcast hosts who love supporting small businesses. My wife and I use it pretty frequently throughout the week, and it's honestly a great way to burn a ton of calories without burning a ton of cash. Not to mention, it's a great tool for skiers, runners, wrestlers, and hockey players. Jimmy is offering all On The Stacks listeners 15% off when they use the code STACKS15. Visit theburn.com today to get 15% off your purchase with code STACKS15 at checkout. Again, that's theburn, THEBRRN.com to get 15% off your purchase with code STACKS15. It's time to get on board today with Burn.
We drive the same roads you drive. We face the same danger you face. When you're involved in a car or a truck crash, it's personal. Because we live here and raise our families here. We're invested here.
To learn more, visit Anzalone Law Offices online at anzalonelaw.com. And now we're back on the Stacks.
Take that message home and to their parents, and then start from that level to help, because you've got to somehow move the needle. And I realize some people aren't going to like what I'm saying, but you know, we're a product of what we've been through. So I've actually talked to African-American people who died of esophageal cancer before they even had a chance to get treated. So you can't argue with me that the field is level. That's not going to sit well with me. So that's one of my big windmills. You know, I like to chase windmills. So this is my windmill. I really believe that we can do better and should do better as a society.
Do you think it's education? I know you say you don't know the answer, but does it start with education, or is there something else?
That's a good question, and it's easy to say things like, well, okay, it starts with education, but I'll give you an example. I was on the school board at Dallas, and I went to one of the leadership meetings in Harrisburg, and we're talking about our school, and we're like, well, we're 96% on, you know, the scores on the SATs, and we're doing this, and we got a pre-K program, we got this. And then we go to break up into groups, and I meet some people from a largely African-American community, a school district in Harrisburg, where these kids don't know where they're getting their next meal. They don't know where they're sleeping that night. They haven't had a good meal. They don't even bother checking for free lunches. Everybody gets a free lunch because it may be the only lunch they have all day. They could have the identical teachers in both schools, but the circumstances that surround the home life are a huge differentiator. And poverty is a big thing. And
yeah.
Here's another thing that a lot of people don't realize, that when you stack up the United States performance on the PISA test, which is the International Achievement Test, and this is where they score everybody from every country, we don't do well. We're at like 17 and 22.
Yeah, we suck, don't we? The U.S. sucks.
Well, we spend twice as much. We spend twice as much on education as any other first world country, and we don't deliver the results that the money should
Yeah, what's up with
generate.
That?
Well, there's a lot behind that. There's a lot behind that. And unfortunately, and even now, the disparity between the poorest school district in the United States and the richest district in the United States, and we're talking public schools here, is huge. It's cataclysmic. So until we do something to reduce that delta, it's going to continue to be harder for people who live in poverty to be able to make it out of that cycle, because it is a cycle. Mm-hmm. And would better teachers help? Yeah, but so would a full belly at breakfast, a full belly at lunch, and so would a two-parent family. 71% of all African-American families don't have a father at home, and I'm not blaming them. The Jim Crow laws made it very easy for African-American families to have children, and back when Johnson passed it, the shtick was the more kids you have, the more money you got, so they had more kids. And I'm not saying that as a knock, but that's the reality. So now we're dealing with writing the scales on that, and hopefully we'll be able to do it. But I'm not saying two-parent households are always good by any stretch.
Yeah.
But
do you think there's any coming back from this?
I every time Allison and I always have this, and this is a boomer in me, right? This is the worst time it's ever been. Never right. been like yeah. this in the history yeah. of the world.
Yeah.
I'm inclined to say no. I'm inclined to say no. There's no coming back from this. But then history reminds us that it's always been the worst time. You know. Mm. So it's anybody's guess. I certainly hope there is some coming back for this. I know that my children are not particularly happy with the landscape we've left them, everything from race relations to economics to life choices, pro-life, trans, all the other stuff. There are so many bones of contention
yeah.
that after 250 years as a country, we should have probably worked through quite a few of them by now. And I don't feel like there's anything collaborative on the horizon. And the only way to solve these problems is to do it somehow around a table. And I don't know that we're ever going to get to that table in time.
Yeah, yeah. I think there's so much division,
right?
You know, in this country, obviously, you could say this probably about every election, but just kind of, piggybacking off what you just said, it's just like now it seems worse than ever. This I'll say election and everything coming up is probably one of the most important, right? I know we probably said the same thing 4 years ago, but like it is. It's like you said, like it's right. we're at this point where it's. I don't know. I feel like it's almost like sink or swim.
Yeah.
And the rest of the world is laughing at America.
Right.
And maybe this isn't the first time, but I think it's been some time that, the rest of the world has been sort of laughing at us and kind of pushing us around. And all we're doing is digging ourselves a bigger hole.
Right.
And, I try to stay positive. I tend to find the positive in everything. But like you said, it just seems like, what the hell? What the hell's next?
Let me ask you this. Did anybody in Kenya, did they all express a desire to come to the United States? Or
yeah.
They did?
Oh, yeah. Okay. Many. I mean, there was, I talked to, people of all ages, again, from kids that were a few years old up to teenagers, young adults, middle-aged, old people, everyone. Mm-hmm. And, obviously a lot of the kids, did. Say like, hey, I want to try to, once I get older, I'd love to come to America. And some of them said I want, I'll find you, I'll look you up, and they want to come. And so there was quite a bit of that, and they all did express interest. And the other thing was too, a lot of them, even the kids that were, I'll say, better educated or the most educated out of a lot of people that we came across, they still don't really even know that much. One of the questions, and I forget the kids, I think they might have been, I'll say teenagers, right? Maybe, say, I don't know, 15 to 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
They're asking me about aliens in the United States. Literally saying, are there aliens in the U.S.? Like, as if they only exist in the U.S., mm-hmm. like nowhere else, you know? So, I mean, again, like there's, you know, I don't want to say that that's all education, but again, like these, you know, the people there, the kids, mm-hmm. people in general, like they're sort of like, I don't want to say in a bubble, but they don't really understand what is really going on, really what's going on in the rest of the world.
Right.
You know what I mean? They might have this like vision of just the United States as whatever, you know, mm-hmm. good, bad, indifferent. Right. But just some weird things that they would say, right. you know, but again, just, you know, not that a bad thing, but I'm just saying like just hearing some of the things that they would say, it's just like right. they just don't know.
Yeah. My son and I were, both of my sons and I went to Iceland, Norway and Sweden back in September. And we were fully expecting everybody to say, oh, well, we'd like to live in the United States. There was nobody.
Mm.
Nobody wanted to come to the United States. We were, it was derisive. And when we would get into discussions with people in taverns and whatnot, they were like, yeah, you guys, you got a real mess over there.
Mm-hmm.
And when we were in Japan, the Japanese culture is really, they're lovely. They're very polite. And but once we got them talking, they were like, nah, we don't go. We don't want to go there.
Yeah.
And so I don't think the rush to come to the United yeah. States is near as profound as it used to be.
Yeah, I would agree. You know, and yeah. I think too with my example that I gave, like I said, like they right. just don't know.
Right.
But also to put it in perspective, a lot of the people that I was talking to about this,
right.
they can't even afford right. a gallon of yeah. water for 8 cents. So to them, even though the U.S. is a shit show, the right. U.S. is a shit show, to them, yeah. anything is better than what they have
right.
for the most part, you know? But again, like I said, but besides, you know, some of those conversations, a lot of the people that we met there,
yeah.
For what they didn't have there, right. they were some of the most happy, cheerful,
right.
grateful, yeah. welcoming, hospitable people
right.
that honestly, I think I've ever met.
Right.
Which is crazy.
So if we are who we say we are as a country, and why are we making it so difficult, and why are we making it a crime for other people to come here? And my stance on this has softened over the last 4 years to the extent that, you know, if you do the research, we really, I'm not saying, you know, you need to pay reparations, because I'm not smart enough to come up with anything
yeah.
there. But I go back to, you know, what happened and where we are. And you can't argue with the fact that generational wealth is important, and everybody is a product of where they started. So, you know, if the average African-American household is 10% wealthy as the Caucasian household, don't tell me the field is level. It's just not. And it kind of pisses me off if you say it. So if you're going to say it, be prepared to discuss it.
Yeah. And how do you think we level it?
See, and there you go. And that's why it's such a hard problem.
Right.
I don't know that I have the answer.
Everybody I don't says, either. That's why that's right. why I'm asking, right?
Right. But just because we don't have the answer doesn't mean it's not a problem. And so affirmative action and quotas and things like that. I mean, everybody talks about that. But the fact of the matter is, you go to Cornell, you go to some of the other Ivies, the quotas, they're African, I mean, whites are 26-27% of the population, and the rest are not, you know, African-American, Hispanics, whatever. But they're not, it's not because there's a quota. It's because they're smart. Right. And Asian Americans are extremely smart. So there's not a lot of that going on. The Ivies and the big schools in the United States do a good job of taking the best and the brightest. And you can't blame them. But that's not enough people, and it's not quickly enough. I mean, you can't matriculate 5,000 kids through, you know, smart kids through the thing and make a big dent in the poverty needle or the poverty climate.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah.
But there are things you can do, and Joe Biden passed some legislation, created something called ARPA-H through the Department of Health and Human Services, and I may be having these acronyms might be wrong, but they throw out a lot of money, and they've got a lot of money out there now for DEI initiatives to help close the delta in healthcare outcomes for people of color. When compared to the non-African-American population. So that's a start, and that's all you can do is start, you know, and nobody expects to change this overnight, but not recognizing it or minimizing it doesn't do justice to the gravity and the danger of the problem that we have. And so that's how I feel about it.
Yeah, I think a lot of it too, and I think you said it before, is just having the conversation.
Right.
You know, talking about it, because I think a lot, you know, again, a lot of this is, especially, you know, nowadays with how easily everybody gets offended.
Right.
You take a stance on something, or you talk about something, the next thing you know, like you're about to, you know, and fist fight somebody. But I think just having these conversations, and conversations where, you know, you might have one opinion, I might have another, and we can, I feel like I'm, you know, I'm able to at least have, whether I agree with you or not, or vice versa. Like, I feel like keep a level head and just have the conversation, and then not be afterwards be like, oh, he's a bad person now. You know what I mean? I think that's a lot of times nowadays, people just, when you get into some type of conversation, you know, I'll say politically, because a lot of it, you know, obviously ends up being politics and all that, and legislation, right? But I think then people become divided, because they just think, oh, well, just because he has a different opinion or she has a different opinion, that, well, I don't, they're not a good person anymore. I can't be friends with that person. And then there's so much more of that nowadays than ever.
Right.
And it's a shame. It's a shame that people just can't, you know, put some of those differences aside and just say, like, hey, we're all just, you know, it may sound cliche, but everybody, I feel like, I mean, for the most part, maybe not everybody, but for the most part, people are trying to make a difference, or at least attempting.
Right.
But again, if you just close off your mind and want to just argue and not try to do anything productive, well, then nothing productive is going to happen.
Yeah. Well, I would like to offer a challenge to all your listeners today.
Do it.
And for those of you who think that the field is level, I'd like you to go to YouTube and watch the James Baldwin, William F. Buckley debates, 1963 in Cambridge. James Baldwin, who is an African-American writer who left the United States early and went to France so they could write without fear of persecution, debated William F. Buckley, who was a prominent Republican writer and commentary. And anybody who watches that and can come back to me now, and then I want you to ask yourself when you watch it, what's changed? And then I want you to come back to me now and tell me the field is level. If you can watch that and say the field is level, I'll wash your car. It's just not going to happen. I think that anybody who does it will see something. And James Baldwin is different from Martin Luther King and Malcolm X and some of the other people that purport or advocated for racial justice, in that he comes at it a different way. He was a homosexual, really ostracized in the United States, but he has an international perspective. And anybody who watches it and comes away and isn't moved by it, I can't imagine that you wouldn't be. So if you are not moved by it and you want to have a discussion, hit me up at my office. I would love to hear your side of it.
How do they hit you up?
Oh, yeah, they can email me at jeffthomasbos@gmail.com. Happy to have the conversation. Happy to send the link, by the way. I think it's that powerful. I think it's that profound. And I really think that every school district in the area should play that on Martin Luther King Day or any other day. But I think it should be required listening, required watching for anybody growing up and when they're still in the opinion forming stage, and when their parents haven't already indoctrinated them, which is happens often as well. But anybody who feels like they still have freedom of thought should watch that and draw their own conclusion.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of things that everybody, you know, I'll even put myself in there too, that we need to unlearn, right?
Yeah.
There's so many things, and I don't really have a good example right now. So this is a horrible statement, but I think there, again, I think probably the reason I don't is just because, well, everything is just, it's just, you think it's just normal, or it's just, that's the way it's always been. Right. But I think there's so many things that everybody needs to unlearn and needs to go back and re-educate themselves. And you know, again, just because you were maybe brought up a certain way or in a certain environment, or you were told a certain thing, or that, hey, this is the way it is, or this is the way that it shouldn't be, or this is the way that it should be. You know, again, like, as you said, a lot of those things are you know, kind of ingrained in us as young kids. And and I think, you know, just by being a student of the game, I try to be of that mindset all the time, that I'm always learning. I'm always learning about anything, everything. Business, life. This isn't, you know, it's not just a professional growth statement. It's it's personal too, meaning, like, you know, again, learning, you know, personal relationships and dealing with people and just all that stuff. But I think there's so many things that all of us need to unlearn. And and if you think that you're above that, well, that's the problem right there.
And if you don't have any empathy for somebody who's living on less than $2 a day and can't afford an 8 cent gallon of water, I find it hard to believe that you, the same you, whoever you are, could actually believe in a supreme being that would let you feel that way and think it was okay.
Right. So, yeah.
I mean, how can you do that? How can you go to church every Sunday and then come out and say the playing field's level? And, you know, no, it's just not right. It's not equitable. It's not, I'm not a man of faith, but I know people who are. And I don't understand how they could square up some of the bigotry, the insidious bigotry, with what they're taught in church every week. So and that's a big thing, and that's probably just behind the school system in terms of how people get indoctrinated, how people get educated. So it's a big problem, and I'm not here to propose any answers, but.
At least talk about it. At least, you know, maybe, you know, again, maybe somebody listening may have the answer. You know, maybe from hearing a conversation like this may spark interest or thought in somebody to take action, you know. And again, like, it's, you know, it may not be one person, it may be a few people, or it may just be one, you know. But again, I think people just, you know, going back to the unlearning thing, but just thinking differently, you know. I think that's one thing that everybody nowadays, just because everybody's so busy and technology and social media and everything. And listen, I mean, I love social media. I love technology. I mean, everything I do, everything I've done is built around that. So I'm not knocking it. Is there negatives to it? For sure. But at the same time, there is a lot of positives, you know. But again, people just get so distracted by all this stuff that we forget how to just be a regular human being. And as you said, have empathy for people and empathy of what somebody's going through. And, you know, not just, you know, writing somebody off because they're having a bad month or whatever it is. You know what I mean? There's so much. There's so much that, you know, people go through day in and day out that, like, you have no idea, you know. And that goes for everybody. It goes for me. It goes for you. It goes for everybody listening and watching this, too. It's the same. Everybody, you know, whether you know, I'm not saying, and I'm not a fan of this when people air tons and tons of negativity on social media. But, you know, again, like, just because I don't, you know, put out all kinds of negative statements and or, oh, I'm having this bad day, oh, this went wrong, like, doesn't mean things don't go wrong in my life. You know, my life is far from perfect. But, you know, do I take pride in constantly improving, constantly learning, finding better ways personally, at home, professionally, at work, just everything. And again, like I said, I think when I had that, you know, between the AFib incident and then the trip to Kenya a few months after that, which was just not long ago. You know, not that I didn't think this way beforehand, but again, these few experiences, as you said before, the experiences kind of shape you and make you who you are, type thing. But they were kind of like pivotal moments, I'll say, in my life that really, you know, kind of woke me up a little more. Like I said this, I was the guest on my own show here for episode 200. And I said, like, that, you know, that AFib incident for me was like a second chance. You know, it was like, it really was like a second chance at life, you know. And you know, when you really sit back and think of that, man, it's like 35 years old. Like, it's like, this happened. Like, you never know, man. Like, we, you know, everybody takes some things, you know, for granted to some degree. But again, like, after that, man, like, I just totally reset my priorities. I reset my entire life. You know, my life was turned upside down multiple times over in the last year. And this isn't me complaining by any means. This is me just, I'm just sharing. I'm just telling people, you know, what's happening, what's going on. And, you know, it's not often that I'll say I share, you know, as much information as I have, you know, recently, but like these experiences for me really, really just made me really sit back and think, hey, like what really matters and what am I really doing here? And why am I really doing it? And what's this all for?
Right.
You know?
Yeah. Well, it's still a very big question. Very big question.
Right. Right.
And everything's relative too. So, this is important to remember because the boomer, I mean, you know, would have said, wow, when I was a kid, it was harder. I'd have to walk uphill
right,
to the podcast.
Yeah, 4 feet of snow both ways. And
But to the extent that something affects you, it affects you. And there's no quantifying it. And who are you to quantify an effect that something has on somebody without being that person? There's so many different things that go into that kind of thing. That if you're going to be really empathetic and you really are going to try and get a better understanding of your human counterparts, you've got to fight the urge to editorialize like that, like a boomer.
Right. So, right. Yeah. So. Yeah. And you know, and I'll even, you know, put the boomer joke aside for a second here, which is rare. But I feel like even you know, my generation, you know, it's still will do that to a degree, you know, and still lack the empathy for what's, you know, what the what the reality actually is. You know, it's not just you boomers, right? Like it's now trickling down to other people, you know, the younger generations, mine and even younger now, where again, same thing. It's like, you know, people are just so distracted by everything that's going on. They're just, they live their life like this and they just, they don't actually take a second to be like, hey, how's Jeff doing today?
Right.
Like what, do you see what just happened to Jeff? Let's call Jeff and talk to Jeff and let's check in with him. Like there's so much lack of that.
So much less of that interpersonal communication, people sitting down, having a conversation. I said, what are they, Gen Z? Who's the youngest ones, 20 to 30?
Dude, I don't even know. I don't either.
They would rather do anything than answer the phone or have a face-to-face conversation. You know, if you can't email it, if you can't text it. And I think that's crippling. And when you start talking about trying to solve the hard problems and arriving at consensus for the big things that are going to matter, if we're raising a bunch of people and a bunch of kids, boys and girls, whatever, that are afraid to talk to each other, how are we possibly going to
get anything fix done? This? Yeah, right. You can't.
So
you can't.
Yeah, and if it's something you're not comfortable with, then we've got to change education or change the way we deliver education or the social construct around education so that they are comfortable with it, or we're not going anywhere.
Yeah, yeah.
So that's how I feel about that. The other thing that I want to mention, the esophageal thing that I had mentioned. Can I share that a little bit? I was looking for something to do post cancer, and I was online looking for things to do in Raleigh, which of course is where I'm moving. And I had some of these volunteer opportunities, and everybody was like, "Well, you could do this, you could do that, and it'd be a lot of fun." And I stumbled on a company called Lucid Diagnostics, and they have a test called EsoGuard that actually will detect the cells, the DNA that is a precursor to Barrett's esophagus or precancer. So this test is not that expensive. It's something that could be administered in the office. It's non-invasive. And there are three big characteristics of esophageal cancer potential patients. And they are if you're over 50, if you're white, and if you're slightly overweight. Those three, right, are the big three in terms of what a potential indicator. So the push for this company is to get those people that are in that big three tested for esophageal cancer before it becomes untreatable or treatable. My treatment was, like I said, it was vicious. It was 11 months, $2.2 million billed to the insurance company. And yeah, I survived. I'm lucky enough to do that. But this particular diagnostic tool could prevent people from getting esophageal cancer and then having to experience all the collateral damage that comes with it. And there's a lot of damage that comes with it. I mean, families are wrecked, generational wealth is completely destroyed. I can tell you my self-esteem you know, took a long time to get back. And then when I poke myself in the eye, it got bad again. But anyway, I'm all right. But the point is, there's so much more to a cancer diagnosis than the actual the dollars and cents of the treatment or the name of the procedure. When I say to you 6 months of FOLFOX treatment, that chemo, right? In your mind, you're thinking, oh, 6 months. Well, it's 12 treatments where you have to wear a bag for 48 hours, and this poison literally cycles through your whole body. You don't feel well. You're sick. You're taking other drugs to offset some of the side effects, and that you can't say that with 6 months of chemo. That's not it. Like, it's like saying it will save lives. Well, yeah, it will save a life, and on its face, that's great, right? But what about the life? And I could tell you, when I started, you know, after my cancer thing, I've been to 27 countries since my diagnosis. I've done crazy things. I've lived what I believe to be a very big life. So I resent anybody trying to say, you know, to lump my life in with that stat. It'll save lives. Well, I'll put a face on life, and Lucid has asked me to do that. So I have been contracted by them to tell my story and explain my life and how it differs from, or not how it differs, but what makes it unique among all those other lives. And I think that there's so many other diagnostic tools out there for other diseases and other cancers that we need to really start focusing on how we can provide these people with resources to do that. And that's what I plan to do in my post print shop
days. Yeah.
Which can't come soon enough, trust me.
So like, what are you doing? Do they have events that you go to? Are you speaking?
Oh, well, we just closed. We just came to an agreement last week, and it was one of those things.
So this is fresh.
Very fresh.
This is fresh.
Very fresh. Yeah, this is hot off the presses.
All right.
There was a website, and it said Lucid Diagnostics has achieved 92% effectiveness in detecting the DNA that is a precursor to esophageal precancer.
That's huge.
Yeah, which is huge. Well, I went to their website, and there were no careers available or anything. So I just sent an email, and you know, I've been so frustrated because maybe they're all millennials, maybe they're all Gen Zs, but nobody wants to talk to a boomer when it comes to employment or anything else. I almost feel like I'm marginalized because of my age, which wouldn't be a surprise, you know. The fact that I don't have an eye, an esophagus, and some other things. Right.
Yeah.
I get it. I could see being rejected, but not right off the bat. Anyway, I shot him an email that basically said, hey, I've been in sales a long time. I'm well-connected in the esophageal cancer community. I think I can help here. Got a nice email back from somebody in PR, said send us something and we'll get it to somebody.
And you're probably like, yeah, right. This is this end of the road. You know how, as sales, you know how that goes, right? Dead end.
End of the road, right.
Yeah.
So the last Sunday, I got an email from, and I was on my way to Raleigh. I was flying to Raleigh. I got an email from the CEO. He said, hey, we don't have any jobs open, but we have but I'd be interested in hearing your story. So we set up a conference call for last Monday night, and we got on at 5:30. It was just he and I. He said, okay. He said, I'm going to warn you, I'm a fast talker. He said, so I'll talk and then you talk, right? We only had 30 minutes. So he got done. He goes, there, 14 minutes. I said, okay, you think you're a fast talker? I said, hold my beer. And I went flying through everything I had to say. And basically what I said was, you know, you should put a face on this. You're saving lives, and I'm one of the lives, and so many people that I have met and still know and have lost are the lives that you can save or not save or
and potentially
and, yeah and it rips parents from children. A good example was there's a kid named Ian Supra, 22 years old, diagnosed with esophageal cancer in Florida, died summarily in 9 months. Another guy named James Pierce out in California, 24 years, died. Gareth Blunt, a friend that I met in Ireland, and I can't play it on the air, but he left me a voicemail the week before he died that was very compelling. And so I convinced them to let me be involved in their sales process. So I'm going to be what I would have to call a potential sales utility. Now, my first meeting with them is in Hartford in September, and I'm excited about it. But so I really can't tell you much more than that.
That's okay. But the CEO reached back out after that initial initial reach out. That's that's impressive.
That, and then that was on a Monday. I'm sorry, can I move a little? That he had already set up a conference call for Wednesday where I met the rest of the team, the rest of the sales team, some of the other stakeholders, some
of the positions. You must have had a good pitch for the CEO to reach out to you, man.
Well, I'm in sales, man, and this might
you're hired.
This might be my last. This might be my last
deal. Your last sales deal,
right? Right. So,
wow, that's that's really cool.
I'm excited about it, and because it makes me feel valuable, you know. When you start losing organs and nobody returns your call or returns your emails, you know, this was a real breath of fresh air for me, especially
for sure.
My fiance's high octane, you know, really smart, really efficient, runs a med tech company. You know, super duper IT. I mean, I've never seen anybody type this fast. I'm not dating her for her type. Allison, I'm not dating her for her type.
I'm kidding.
But she sets a very high bar, and the fact that she got me to think, she helped restore confidence in me, and then this thing happening with them, you know, I'm feeling like, in as much as I can be at the top of my game, given where I am in my life, that's where I am right now. So feeling good about that.
That's awesome.
Right.
Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Yeah, that is really cool. You know, it's kind of weird that, you know, when I reached out to you, this all kind of happened simultaneously.
Yeah,
and I really believe, you know, in the universe in some way, sort of connecting the dots with the right people, the right time, the right place, the right circumstances. And you know, just having you back on, it's been so long. And, you know, I know it sounds kind of weird, but I think about you a lot, just, you know, I think about a lot of my guests, right? But you know, yours hits a little closer to home for me personally a little bit, some of the things I shared. But just the fact that, you know, I reached out to you and said, hey, like, what's going on? How you been? Like, hey, like, you know, let's maybe connect and maybe have you come back on the show. And coincidentally, right around the same time that happened for you. It's just, it's kind of weird, but I mean that in a good way.
Right.
You know?
Thank you. Yeah, me too. I mean, I was excited to be able to tell somebody about it.
Yeah. And I'm excited to hear about it. I mean, that's honestly, you know, you gave me like a one liner and a text, but obviously it didn't really give much, you know, much context to how it all went down and what's going on and what it is. And of course, you know, I Googled them quick just to check them out and everything. But yeah, I mean, that is really cool. I mean, it's, you know, like I said, cool to hear you share the story and the fact that the CEO reached out and said, let's get on a call and let's see what we can do together. That's impressive, you know, from their standpoint. That's big.
It was honest. So when you're honest and it's easy to, you know, when you're completely honest and you believe in what you can deliver, really, there's something very clear-eyed about it. And I got some very nice compliments from
people.
Even though I only have one eye.
But still clear.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Thank you very much for that.
Too soon?
Thank you for reminding the listeners or watchers.
Too soon?
No, it's not.
Okay, all right. I felt bad there for a second. Okay. Well, no. Honestly, it's really. I'm super excited to see hear how your meeting, your next meeting goes, and I think this episode may probably be out before you have that. But I know you and I will obviously be keeping in touch, and because I'm excited to hear where this is going to go. Because you know, again, I mean, it's to me, it sounds like a game changer.
Well, it's a start. You know, we talked about the racial equity, outcome equity, moving the needle. This is more than that. This is a diagnostic tool that if given to everybody who was at risk for esophageal cancer, would literally cut the number of people who would have to go through what I went through by thousands and thousands of people. So you're looking at thousands of children, thousands of marriages, thousands of family fortunes. Not that I had a family fortune, by the way, but you know, it's the collateral damage that needs to be quantified for people. So,
create a ripple effect.
Right.
A positive one.
Right.
You know, compared to the negative ripple effect that you just touched on.
Yeah.
You know, and that's big. That's big. Yeah. Even if it only, you know, helps a small percentage of the population, that's still huge. It's more than what's not being done now and what's not happening and what's not being taken care of. I mean, again, any direction in the right direction is good,
right?
You know, in my opinion,
right?
Given the, you know, I'll say like the lack of resources and information, right. in the community with esophageal cancer and the lack of right. Research and knowledge about it.
Right.
You know, again, just from our last conversation and knowing what you've shared with me, I mean, this sounds like it's a huge step in the right direction.
Yeah, and I'm lucky to be here to be a part of it, and I really am, and I'm always grateful. You know, the eye thing kind of threw me. I'm not going to lie. I was kind of pissed off about that.
I would be too. I would be too.
So I did have a little bit of the, you know, it was a bit of a hiccup.
Yeah, you're pissed.
I'm pissed.
Yeah, I'm pissed for you.
Yeah, thank you. I'm not going to swear on your show, but I was fucking pissed.
There you go. There it is.
But I'm back.
Less pissed. You got a new thing going now.
Yeah.
You know?
I do need a little righteous indignation. Once in a while, there's got to be something that pisses me off to get me up out of bed some days, right?
I agree. Even when things are going right in my life, I need that too. And right. I think everybody does to a degree. You get complacent, you get bored, whatever it is, you get stagnant in life. It's like sometimes you need that. Yeah. You need the kick in the ass to reinvigorate your sense of purpose.
Yeah. Well, and it's a boomer thing too.
That too. I didn't want to go there again, but since you did.
Speaking of which, you want to go? Are we doing any boomer questions?
Yeah. Should we do a couple?
I would love to.
I think we'll do a couple before we end. All right. Let's see here. What do we got? All right. Let's check. Ask a boomer. Here's a good one. Why do boomers get so pressed about younger people not carrying cash? Why is that a thing?
What does press mean?
Like, you know, they get like mad and they're like, well, why don't you have cash on you? You know, my generation, we're like the Venmo, you know, like we're always like, you know, Venmo, like.
I don't carry cash either.
Well, you're a bad boomer.
Well, what's a generation above mine? The greatest generation, the World War II.
They're definitely cash. Like they're like cash under the mattress people.
Yeah.
Right.
I'm not so mad about that. The ones that do get mad, you know, they're probably the ones that still have the, you know, Windows, DOS, computer, still have an AOL address, things like that. There are some boomers
Wasn't that the email I sent earlier? Wasn't yours AOL?
Right. I have had dial up, or I would have answered you sooner. Right.
I thought so. Yeah. I was wondering what was taking so long.
I think there's a segment of boomers that aren't that way. But if you're upset or put off by the boomers that are angry because you don't carry cash, throw $5 behind one of your credit cards or I don't know.
Yeah.
That's poor. Remember, he's a boomer or she's a boomer. Yeah. She's not going to be around much longer.
How about this? You kind of touched on it before a little bit, but why do boomers insist on leaving voicemails?
You know what? I used to be that way. I would leave my children and other people these voicemails. And I'm like, and then I would call them later and say, do you hear my voicemail? No. So I that is something that I have got. I think there is a movement of boomers toward enlightenment.
So you're moving towards.
I don't leave voicemails anymore. No.
You left me a two second blank voicemail earlier.
Just by the way, you did. Yeah.
Yeah. It's okay.
If I say anything like
I saw like and what made me think of it was because earlier when you called and I missed your call and I was on another call. So I see a call coming through. Right. And then all of a sudden I get the notification voicemail. I'm like typical boomer.
Yeah.
Right.
And it was just two seconds.
And then but you did text me. Yeah. It was 2 seconds of nothing. Yeah. It was just like you probably forgot to hang up 2 seconds too late. But then I think you text me and then I text you back. I was on the call. Hey, I'm on another call. I'll call you back. So. Right. You did good there.
Thank you. Or if I do leave a voicemail, it'll be something funny and colorful, like Thomas here, give me a call. I want to talk to you about this.
Yeah, I think you may have left me some funny ones like that in the past.
And then I like military talk, so I'll say something like Thomas out right at the end.
Mm.
And I got a lot of people talking that way.
Yeah, I could enjoy, even though I don't enjoy many voicemails myself, right? I gotta admit, right? However. You know, if somebody left me a voicemail like that, I would appreciate that because it's not just your typical boomer boring voicemail. Right. You know, it's a hey.
Or if I'm going to leave one, I try and leave it as I say it as fast as I can say.
Yeah, right. It's not a 60-second story.
No. But if I want to say a lot, if I'm going to talk for 15 seconds, I'm going to say 45 seconds worth of stuff and challenge you to figure out what the hell I said.
I like that too.
Right. Any other boomer questions?
All right, let's see. Maybe we got one more here. How about one more? Let's see. Okay, this is a good one.
All right.
Are you ready? Mm-hmm. If boomers think millennials are such worthless morons, why do they download malware like it's a hobby, and then ask us to fix their computers.
See, again, I'm in a different, I don't download malware.
You don't? Didn't you ask me to come fix your computer earlier?
Not intentionally. You know, hey, all I know is
sorry, Mom. This wasn't about my mom, but right.
Well, ever since.
But, you know, my mom says, she asks, hey, could you fix this? Hey, what do I do here? What do I do with that? You know,
malware is from visiting sites that are,
Well, it doesn't have to be malware.
What do you mean?
Let's just, forget the malware part. No. Okay. Let's just think of it like this.
All right.
Okay. I'll say it like this. If boomers think millennials are such worthless morons, then why do they ask us to fix their computers all the time?
I don't see, again, I'm not trying to, make this a non-boomer thing, but.
I think you're trying to make it a non-boomer thing.
No, there's some old guys fixing computers out there still. Like, you go to Wyoming Avenue, I better not mention any names.
Yeah.
But there are a lot of older people that are still doing this kind of thing. Now, and I would never, believe me, I would never let my children fix my, I don't want them, they're not going to see my browsing history. No way.
Yeah, definitely a lot of malware on your computer.
Well, yeah.
You just work through the malware.
I admit nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
But I categorically reject that statement as being potentially false.
Mm. So, okay.
What else would you like to talk about, Bill?
I think those are my only boomer shots at you today.
Okay, that seems fair.
I think I'll leave you off. I'll leave you off on that. I don't want to crush you too much.
Thank you.
Since you're in high spirits and everything now, I don't want to send you back into the depression.
Kick a boomer when he's down, right?
Right, exactly. You were just coming out, so I thought I'd go a little light on you today.
I'm going to throw this out there for your viewers, if you don't mind, or listeners.
Yeah.
If you have a boomer question, send it to jeffthomasbos@gmail.com, and I will answer to the best of
and
my
we'll read them.
Boomer ability.
And we'll read them off.
And copy Bill in.
And you can come anytime, by the way. You can come in at any time. Yeah, now that I'm not operating out of a shoebox somewhere else, the location that wasn't mine, now that I actually have a legitimate, not that the studio there wasn't legit, but it was, but, now that I have, we got a couple studios here. I showed you, we got the second one back there. And listen, you come by, we got the equipment, we got the skill, we got that's everything here, man. So,
and you know me, I have no shortage of things to say. And now,
you don't.
Hopefully I've affiliated with myself with people who are going to be able to let me pay you to say it.
There we go. Yeah.
And I would encourage all of you out there to do the same thing, as opposed to investing your own resources to pile it up and have that 4-minute chaotic video that Vito
it's still created. It's still one of the greatest videos ever. I mean, honestly, like it really is. I mean, it's an unforgettable. I'll probably be showing my kids that in like 20 years from now.
Yeah, and this is that's a cautionary tale for doing your own podcast right there.
Right, that's,
watch that.
Yeah, you could be. I feel like we could take that. Well, with your permission, and we could take that, and that could be that could be like an ad for my business.
Right, you could put that big Ghostbuster thing right across. Yeah, go ahead. As a matter of fact, I'll sign the document right now.
Yeah. Please do. Yeah, I think that'd be great. Before we end, any boomer, any unwanted boomer advice you'd like to give out? How about we end on that? Unwanted boomer advice.
Yeah, I would like to give.
Or maybe some wanted too.
Some wanted, but.
Yeah, it could be serious, it could be funny, or both.
But I want to talk to you 20 to 30 year old people. And because, just because your view is different than ours, okay? There's no reason to be sarcastic about it. And there's absolutely no reason to think you're 100% absolutely right. You're not always right. And just because you're young and you turn around and say, okay, boomer, well, no. If that's all you're going to say and then walk away, then you know what? You didn't learn enough. You want to prove a point with a boomer, stand your ground and make your own argument. Stand and deliver. You can't just break off and say, okay, boomer, because you know what? We're here to engage you. And sometimes we're here to teach you. We're always here to help. Well, most of the time.
And sometimes to leave a voicemail.
Yeah. JeffThomasBOS@gmail.com. Here for any kind of boomer advice.
We'll keep Jeff on standby. I've got Jeff on speed dial. The younger generation doesn't know what speed dial is. Boomer thing, I guess.
Happy to type my response, forward it to Bill. Bill can read it on air.
Anytime.
Yeah.
Anytime. This was great having you back on, Jeff.
I'm thrilled to be here, Bill.
And, yeah.
And I, as you know, I was one of your biggest proponents early on, and I am.
You were, and I appreciate that, and I'd be remiss to not acknowledge that, and. You know, I've referenced you mm-hmm. many times throughout this journey that I've been on for the last few years, and
right.
I appreciate your support, and yeah, I mean, just you're a great guy, you're a fun guy. You know, all jokes aside, I mean, I really value your friendship, your mm-hmm. opinion, professionally, personally, all that. So I appreciate you taking the time to come back in.
My pleasure. Let's do it again sometime.
Let's do it again. In between the travels, you know, you're going down south. Maybe one of these times you can maybe take me with you.
Sure. You play golf?
I will for the trip. I don't, but
you never know. You may have to go on the road. You got to,
Yeah, yeah.
Well, it's not Kenya, but it's, you know, it's something.
It's yeah. Right? Okay. All right.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Good. That's good. That's good. All right. Okay, Boomer.
All right. Thank you very much.
All right. On the Stacks, the MPP studio. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
If you want to see more On the Stacks content, subscribe to our YouTube channel at youtube.com/onthestackspodcast or search the hashtag On the Stacks on Instagram, Facebook, and LinkedIn.